Chris Boyd. Up next on Think, worries about children's health in light of a so-called assault on science by the Trump administration. We'll spend this hour with Jenna Reed, who is lead science and policy analyst at the Center for Science and Democracy. The organization's new report outlines systematic cuts in environmental regulations, federal food inspections, product safety enforcement, and nutrition benefits, all of which the Union of Concerned Scientists says would disproportionately harm kids. We'll get a rundown of new and proposed regulations and talk about how changes under President Trump compare with those made by previous administrations. Our conversation starts after a short break. Today, we're going to talk about recent changes to federal regulatory policy. Wait, stop. I know what you're thinking. Snooze fest, right? But bear with me here because this is important. While the Byzantine workings of high-level rules about air quality and consumer product safety and food inspection might seem like somebody else's problem, chances are they matter in a concrete way to somebody you care about. Because while most of us won't notice when these rules change, they can have a direct and life-changing effect on the health of your kids. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Children, of course, are not just mini adults. Relative to their size and weight, they eat and drink and breathe more than adults at exactly the times when their bodies and brains are still developing. So it's important that public policy is informed by the very best research available to ensure their safety. But a nonprofit advocacy organization that counts more than 200,000 U.S. scientists among its members is concerned children are being forgotten in a wave of regulation rollbacks designed to make things easier for businesses and industries. Jenna Reed is lead science and policy analyst in the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists. She's lead author of the new report, Endangering Generations, How the Trump Administration's Assault on Science is Harming Children's Health. She joins us from the studios of NPR in Washington to talk about it. Jenna, welcome to Think.
Thanks so much for having me, Chris.
In the modern era, how has the federal government used science as a tool for determining policies to protect children's health and safety?
Yeah, so, the federal government has been really well equipped at taking science and using it to make good decisions. Science is a tool that we use to understand the problems that we face and also to think about how to develop solutions that best protect public health and the environment. So it's really essential that the policies that the federal government puts out at agencies ranging from the Environmental Protection Agency to the Consumer Product Safety Commission follow the science when they're looking at how best to protect us.
So what makes the Trump administration notably different from prior administrations?
So I think, we've studied many other administrations, and the Center for Science and Democracy, which is a program at UCS, which is where I work, we've been looking at the way in which political interference can undermine science-based policies. And this is something that happens under Republican and Democratic administrations and has happened for, long before the Trump administration came in. But what sets the Trump administration apart is really, I think, the sheer number of ways in which the administration is undermining science or failing to listen to its own scientists or eliminating scientific programs or politicizing grant funding for scientific research. There's all sorts of tactics that are being used by this administration that have been employed by previous administrations, but it's just the sheer number. We've tracked what we've termed attacks on science that have occurred over the past 3 years and found that there are over 120 different examples where this administration has failed to use the science that it should be using to protect public health and the environment.
So as I noted in the introduction, a lot of scientists believe environmental quality is more important for children even than for adults. Can you tell us about the evidence for that?
Right. So there's a lot of evidence that points to the real vulnerability of kids. Their bodies are developing. The neural connections are developing. I think it's millions of neural connections are being created in just a child's first few years. And so therefore, children are just uniquely vulnerable to threats like chemicals, the chemical exposure, where the way in which those neural connections are made or the way in which the development of the body is progressing can really be harmed and hampered in some way by exposure at a very young age. So that's why a lot of the like environmental threats, you know, lead exposure or exposure to particulate matter and air pollution, those things can really impact kids first and worst.
Why would lax environmental protections end up affecting low-income and minority children more than wealthy and white children?
Right. So, you know, it's a profound problem in this country is that the individuals who are most underserved are also those who are experiencing the environmental and chemical burdens of much of the energy production in this country. When you look at where power plants are located and where Superfund sites, EPA sites, you know, former industrial facilities are located that are leaching toxins into nearby water and air. They're usually in areas where nearby communities are communities of color and low-income communities. So what we find is that these people are experiencing really the burden of rollbacks when, you know, when policies are rolled back, they're the first, they're kind of the like ground zero to feel the first effects of those rollbacks, which is why we, you know, we need to strengthen our environmental policies to ensure that those communities are protected most because they are experiencing so much more than kind of the rest of us.
Okay, let's talk specifically about some of the changes at the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA. The agency is no longer funding these 13 facilities known as children's centers. What was the purpose of children's centers?
Yeah, so the EPA's Children's Center or EPA funding of Children's Centers are academic relationships across the country where faculty and professors were studying the relationship between exposures at a young age and the resulting impacts. And it was really a major issue that to pull funding from those locations because the research that could come out of those, you know, long-term studies that were being done by these individuals and are still being done, although, you know, the funding has been cut dramatically, it could be really helpful in figuring out how we can create solutions and create regulations that really protect children first. And so, you know, this is a trend that we've seen under the Trump administration is the funding of research that looks at the impacts of environmental pollution is being walked back. The way in which people can even talk about some of those impacts at the agencies is being restricted in some ways. And all of this, poses this real risk to not just children of today, but future generations who could be benefiting from all of the wonderful research coming out of these children's centers, which will now likely take longer to do and be, you know, tied up in fights for more funding when they could have received it from EPA, which, you know, their mission is to protect public health and the environment. So I'm not sure why they're pulling money out of a research that drives to answer those questions.
Is there a lot of internal conflict within the EPA? I can't imagine too many people, you know, sign on for a career with the Environmental Protection Agency who don't care about environmental issues. That said, of course, there's appointed leadership at the very top.
Absolutely. You know, and EPA, I think, is one of the agencies that's been hardest hit by the, you know, a drop in morale and just a general, you know, a feeling that their work is not being valued by this administration. You know, they're career scientists who spent 20, 30, sometimes even 40 years doing really important work to make sure that water quality or air quality is, you know, something that we take for granted, frankly, every day. And so these scientists who've now spent their lives working on these to further these public health goals are seeing the progress that they've made and that they've seen this agency make over time really hindered by some new regulatory rollbacks or policies that are being passed that are just completely not based in the science. And I think people are frustrated. We did a survey a couple years ago of federal scientists across a long list of science agencies, and EPA really stood out as one of the agencies in which individuals felt like there was a lot of political interference happening that was impacting their work. They felt that morale was low, and they felt that it was harder for them to do their jobs. And that's just, you know, it's really unacceptable. I did a fellowship. I was lucky enough to be able to do a fellowship after I completed my master's degree at Region 3 of the Environmental Protection Agency in Philadelphia. And I was just blown away by the incredible work that was being done by the EPA scientists, the policy experts. Everyone was working together in this amazing harmony to really make sure that they were making the, you know, meeting the EPA's objective to protect environment and public health. And I worked on a team that was working specifically on enforcing the Clean Water Act and making sure that individuals weren't dumping or ditching wetlands when they weren't allowed to. And so, you know, I got to see firsthand exactly how important it is that we have funding going to the EPA programs, and also that we are supporting these scientists who are spending their careers doing this really important work that you mentioned at the top of the show ends up trickling down into our lives. Because, you know, we all want clean water and clean air, and we all want that for our families and our kids. And so, you know, we really need to make sure that we have an administration that is prioritizing kids' health when it's making decisions. And it needs to make sure that it's also using the science, the best available science, to inform those decisions.
How has the EPA changed regulations surrounding lead exposure?
Right. So there were a couple things that happened related to lead over the past couple of years. The agency had the opportunity this year to update the lead and copper rule, which deals with lead in action levels when there's lead in, found to be in waterways and water, drinking water systems. And overall, there were some positive things that actually did come out of this administration, including making sure that schools were tested for lead and childcare facilities were tested for lead, which is, you know, a really important development. But something that happened that was really disappointing was that the number of or the percent of water lines that needed to be replaced was actually shrunk by half under this administration's rule that was released in the fall. And, you know, what this means is that there will be fewer communities that are protected from lead in their water. Really, the best way to ensure that kids aren't exposed to lead is to replace service lines and make sure that they don't contain lead. And there's no safe level of exposure of lead to kids. We know that, you know, it's a really potent neurotoxin. It impacts their development, even, you know, some would term as a small dose of lead can actually really cause a lot of problems. And, you know, we've seen that across the country. We've seen it in Flint. We've seen it in Newark, New Jersey. We've saw it in Washington, D.C. in the early 2000s. We need to make sure that we are not seeing this anymore. We know what the problem is. We know how to solve the problem. And we need the Environmental Protection Agency to take stronger action to really fund this problem and make sure that we are implementing these laws to ensure that kids aren't being exposed to lead in their homes, in their schools, in any of the places that they spend time in.
My guest is Jenna Reed, lead science and policy analyst in the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists. She's lead author of a new report, Endangering Generations: How the Trump Administration's Assault on Science is Harming Children's Health.
Taken historic steps to lift the restrictions on American energy, to reverse government intrusion, and to cancel job-killing regulations. And by the way, regulations not only in this industry, but in every industry. We're doing them by the thousands, every industry. And we're going to have safety, we're going to have clean water, we're going to have clean air. But so many are unnecessary, and so many are job-killing. We're getting rid of the bad ones.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. That was President Trump in 2017 signing the Energy Independence Executive Order. My guest this hour is Jenna Reed, lead science and policy analyst in the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists. She's lead author of a report called Endangering Generations: How the Trump Administration's Assault on Science is Harming Children's Health. Jenna, is it fair to ask scientists to consider the potential effect on children's well-being of job-killing regulations, of the fact that maybe their parents have lost work because there's too much regulation?
You know, I think it's a fair question to ask whether a regulation is absolutely critical. And, you know, what we're finding is the Trump administration is targeting regulations that are really essential for protecting public health and had all sorts of really positive benefits that were, some of which were already being seen. You know, some of these policies that had been implemented under the Obama administration or previous administrations had been showing to have real positive health impacts, whether it's in, you know, reduced number of asthma attacks or fewer respiratory illnesses, or making sure that kids have more time to be in school. And those benefits are being taken away for, you know, an unclear reason. You know, it's really, this administration has had a really poor track record in actually supporting its regulatory decisions with any type of evidence, which is why many of them are being challenged in the courts, and some of them are losing there. It's just, you know, this lack of interest in and concern for the evidence and the use of science in policymaking that's really making for decisions that are going to be compromising public health.
All right, I want to go to the phones. Zachary is calling from Austin, Texas. Hi, Zachary.
Thank you for taking the call, and thank you to your guest for her research into these important matters. Just a quick comment. I have family members who are ranchers from way back and involved in those industries, and they voted for Trump, and their favorite thing about Trump is the fact that he is so committed to rolling back a lot of these, what they see as unnecessary regulations. They think that a lot of these regulations were created by ivory tower intellectuals who don't know how things really work on the ground. Or in the case of the BLM, they talk about 90-day wonders who come out of these colleges from the East Coast and tell them how they should manage their land that they've been on for generations. So what do you say to those people who feel that they know best?
Thanks for calling.
It's a great question, and thank you for that. You know, one of the reasons that we wrote this report is to have, we were seeing these issues come up, and we wanted to have a place where we talk about the suite of actions that this administration has taken on and how they all are impacting or have the likelihood of impacting kids' health once they're born out. And so we can say that these impacts are going to happen. We have done the research, and that's what we wanted to present the public with this report and with the storybook that we have that goes along with it. You know, it's really important that we understand that the people working at these agencies that are following the science and writing rules that really get to the heart of the science and protecting public health. These people are not doing it for the sake of doing it. They're doing it because it's the mission of the agency. The Environmental Protection Agency was created under a Republican administration to do a job that was really sorely needed. At the time, we had really poor air quality. Our waters were incredibly polluted. They were on fire in places. There was a real need. And so I think people have gotten a little bit complacent with the way in which the environmental protections that were put in place after the EPA was created, they worked, right? Our air is cleaner. Our water is cleaner. But that's not a function of, it's a function of the way in which the EPA looked at the science, decided what to do, and to set policies that were based in it to protect us. And so we need to make sure that those policies are continuing to be implemented and enforced. And that requires an effort from the agency and staffing at the agency that really prioritizes enforcement. We're seeing very low levels of enforcement under the Trump administration, which is boasting about, making sure that we are enforcing our policies. But really, when you look at the numbers, we have fewer fines of companies for misdeeds in environmental affairs. We have lower number of inspectors at the agencies that are actually going out and taking a look and holding polluters and industries accountable. This administration absolutely is failing to look at the science and conduct itself in a way that supports public health and environmental health. And I think at the end of the day, it's as a parent and doing the research that went into this report, I found myself really alarmed at the way in which all of these examples have the same thing in common, which is the kids who are not responsible for any of these problems are going to be the ones dealing with the most dire consequences of them. And I'm sorry.
Oh, please continue.
Okay. And this administration is really just failing to ensure that our kids are going to have access to the same kinds of healthy environments that we had when we were younger.
I was reading along in this report, and I have to tell you, Jenna, I was really surprised to get to this section about asbestos because I thought it had already been banned. So help us understand what the laws are around its importation and its use and how we compare with other industrialized countries on asbestos standards.
Right. A lot of people are surprised by this because it's sort of a household term and everyone sort of understands how toxic asbestos is. And it's a known carcinogen. But it's still in our homes and in our schools across the country because it was used for a very long time in insulation and other building materials. And while it's no longer mined for in the U.S., it's still imported in products in the U.S. and is not banned, even though it's banned in 60 other countries across the world. And not only that, but we had the scientific, we have the knowledge, we know the science, the body of evidence that really talks about the fact that exposure to asbestos is very harmful to adults and also children, because when you're exposed at a young age, the asbestos particles stay in your body and can manifest themselves in cancer earlier than even if you had been exposed later in life. And despite knowing this and despite EPA scientists suggesting and recommending to the administration that it actually conducts a ban and no longer allows import of asbestos, the administration moved forward with a regulation of it, not a ban of it. And not only that, but the regulation under the new TSCA, which is the Toxic Substances Control Act, failed to look at legacy uses of the chemical when EPA scientists were to do risk assessments related to it, which means that all of the risks associated with exposure in homes that have asbestos and schools that have asbestos in it will not be considered. And this has since been actually challenged in the courts, and the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that the decision was unlawful. But the agency is still persisting and is failing to listen to the science and failing to make a decision that seems to be a really easy one to make when you're an agency that supports public health and the environment. Asbestos should absolutely not be on the market anymore, and we should be doing everything in our power to make sure that there is abatement and that asbestos is not an issue that kids now need to be worried about. You know, in Philadelphia, there's a really unfortunate case of many of the public schools understanding that they have asbestos, that there's actually been some cases of mesothelioma for people who worked in the schools. And they're suing, the teachers union is suing the school board as a result. So I think there will be continued action around asbestos because, you know, as you mentioned, this is a chemical we've known for a very long time the harms of, and the agency EPA is still failing to protect us from it. And this isn't just a Trump administration issue. This has been an issue of a failure of other previous administrations, but the Trump administration is particularly, you know, the decision that they made under the new TSCA to not look at any of the legacy uses seems to have been an intentional move, really, to ignore the way in which we are all mostly exposed to asbestos.
You say schools built between 1946 and 1972 almost certainly were built with asbestos.
Absolutely, yeah.
And if those schools are in bad condition, students are more likely to be exposed?
That's right. So, you know, if there have been, first of all, not all schools are required to be inspected for asbestos under the law. But if they're, you know, a school that hasn't been updated lately and hasn't been, you know, there's a whole procedure in place when a building is updated to actually remove asbestos that's already in there. If it hasn't underwent any of those sort of mitigation techniques, then, you know, it's possible that the dust on the floor and, you know, the other places like tiles and in the ceilings, they are just kind of leaking, and the asbestos fibers could be rubbing off in different areas of the school.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Okay, I want to go back to the phones now. This time we have Christian on the line in Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Christian.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead.
Hi. So here in Kentucky, we have a major issue that I see metastasizing across America, and that is no regulation or extremely light regulation. Martin County, for example, has one of the most polluted water systems in America. There's a famous documentary film about it. And what I'm worried is that this president, along with the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, are metastasizing Kentucky Fried water across America. And Flint is just the most exposed sore, for lack of a better word. But there are thousands of Flints. And unfortunately, Michigan and Kentucky are ground zero for that.
Thanks for calling, Christian. What do you know about that, Jenna?
You know, I think it's a really important point to make that there, you know, we have heard about Flint because of all of the coverage of it and very warranted coverage because of the crisis that all of the people have gone through there and are still going through. But there are so many other Flints across the country, and not just with lead, but with other toxic contaminants. You know, there another case study in the report is on per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, or PFAS as they're known, which is a chemical that's used to make Teflon that's been brought to the motion picture audiences lately with the film Dark Waters with Mark Ruffalo and Anne Hathaway. But these substances are in drinking water across the country. They are in surface water across the country. They're in our bodies. They're in food packaging. They're in our food. They are very persistent. They are bioaccumulative. they build up in our bodies, and they are largely unregulated by the Environmental Protection Agency. Some of that is because the industry purposely hid the science on them for decades, but some of that is because the agency has failed to take adequate action fast enough. And this is a problem that is being faced by states and municipalities across the country who are bearing the cost now of having to do that testing to understand what's in their water, because EPA, because there's no enforceable water standard under the Safe Drinking Water Act, there's no requirement for the federal government to monitor or track these chemicals in our water. And there's no requirement for industry to let us know when they're releasing them into our waterways. So where that leaves us is we're bearing the burden. We're paying for it in higher taxes. We're paying for it in higher water bills, and we're paying for it in higher medical costs for the people who are experiencing health effects, some of which include, you know, higher risk of a couple types of cancer, including kidney cancer and testicular cancer, thyroid issues. In children, there's increased rates of asthma, decreased ability for their body to fight off immune issues. So there's all sorts of these issues. And this is just with one type of chemical class. And there's all sorts of chemicals and hazardous air pollutants that are being released by industrial facilities across the country that are not being adequately regulated, you know, or not being adequately enforced by this Environmental Protection Agency under this administration, which is catering to industry and its bottom line.
What is the EPA's once-in, always-in policy?
Yeah, the once-in, always-in policy was actually issued by George H.W. Bush and was a way for ensuring that once a hazardous air pollutant emitter, so an industrial facility, made it onto a list as an emitter of over a certain threshold of pounds of pollutant, they were going to stay on this list, which meant that they would be held accountable for that. You know, there would be more tracking and more technology fixes that they would have to do, and they would be liable to the EPA and made to actually follow the rules. And what the Trump administration has done recently is roll back the once-in, always-in policy to make it easier for companies, once they cross that threshold, to come off of that list, which means less accountability for industries that are polluting these very hazardous air pollutants, including benzene and others, that really, you know, are impacting communities that live nearby, often communities of color and low-income communities.
My guest is Jenna Reed, lead science and policy analyst in the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists. We're talking about her report, Endangering Generations. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Jenna Reed. She's lead author of a new report called Endangering Generations, How the Trump Administration's Assault on Science is Harming Children's Health, that was produced by the Union of Concerned Scientists. She's lead science and policy analyst in the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Jenna, I want to talk about how USDA standards have changed at plants that produce pork and poultry. This one came as a real surprise to me.
Right. So, you know, this is something that the Trump administration has really, as I mentioned before, has been targeting enforcement at the agencies and reducing number of inspectors across agencies, not just at the EPA, but we're seeing this at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, where there are now, as a result of a couple of different rules, one on poultry products and one on pork processing, there are rules that are proposed and one finalized that will actually change the way that our processing facility plants across the country are inspected by federal inspectors who, you know, are not hired by the plants themselves, therefore are independent and objective when they're looking at the lines, and also are planning on privatizing meat inspection. And the other piece of this is not just the privatization, but the speeding up of the processing lines, which can really be a huge worker safety issue. And also, it means that the workers on the line have less time to check for things like fecal matter on a piece of chicken or some other type of contamination that could end up in the products that we end up buying at the grocery store. So what these policies are doing is really threatening food safety, or at least, you know, the safety of meat across the country at processing plants where we had a good system. We had meat inspectors who were hired by the federal government to do the very job that they should be doing, looking after the safety of food products across the country. And now we're seeing that reduction coupled with this privatization and increased line speeds that really put our food at risk. And, you know, while it's unsafe for all of us and appetizing for all of us, it's especially harmful to children whose immune systems are developing and are at greater risk of the harmful impacts of, you know, dangerous microbes like Salmonella and E. coli. You know, I, for one, would am a little bit more careful when I'm thinking about buying food for my daughter and my family to eat when it comes to, poultry and pork, just because I know that this rule could mean that our food is less safe. And that's just something we should not have to worry about as parents. We should be able to rely on the federal government to take care of some of those bigger issues like food safety, air quality, water quality. And unfortunately, like all these other issues, we're just seeing this drop off in enforcement and changes to the policies that aren't based in the science and are risking the health of kids and adults alike.
What about the argument that, you know, meat producers have a vested interest in not allowing contaminated meat into the food supply because they face just huge liabilities in the event of some kind of illness? Wouldn't they be just as committed to preserving food safety as independent inspectors at the USDA?
I mean, you could say the same for all sorts of industries that are putting pollutants into the environment. You know, won't they be held accountable for any of the harms that they pose to the public health? But the truth is especially with under this administration, the industry is not being held to account. And, you know, it's there have been too many failures for us to rely solely on a privatized meat inspection program for the safety of our food. There's a need for the public sector in ensuring that we have independence and objectivity in all sorts of inspection programs that protect us. And, I think food safety needs to be a part of that.
What's going on at the Consumer Product Safety Commission under the Trump administration?
So this is another case of a decrease in enforcement that we're seeing. And this is the Consumer Product Safety Commission, which is responsible for tens of thousands of products that enter our homes and workplaces, childcare facilities. And what we noticed, we took a look at the recall data over the past decade, and found that under the Trump administration over the past few years, the number of recalls of children's products has decreased significantly. And that's not a testament to safer products. That's a testament to kind of a failure to hold industry responsible for defective products, or even to have the programs on staff at CPSC that will catch defective products. One example of how we know this is still a big problem is there was a very popular jogging stroller that was really harming kids and adults. The front wheel was busting off of it mid-runs. So parents and kids were finding themselves with broken bones and scrapes and bruises as a result, and were reporting this to the CPSC. So CPSC knew about this problem for a long time. Its own safety experts were looking into it and doing their own investigation and finding that this product really should have been recalled as a result. But when it came down to it, the CPSC delayed a decision to require a recall for the with the company and the stroller, and delayed on it for a while, which meant even more injuries coming through, and then eventually landed on a robust educational campaign instead of a recall as the solution for this, which meant that no one who had a stroller was told. No one that had one of these strollers was actually told, you know, there is a defective part on this product. You could be at risk. And that's the importance of the recall piece of it, is that we, if you register your product online, you're immediately notified when there's something wrong with it. And that's what the Consumer Product Safety Commission is built to do. And it has been failing to do it, not just on strollers, but on other children's products. You know, there have been stories out about infant sleepers, where the agency and the industry creating those products knew for a long time that they should not be used as a place to leave your kid to sleep, and it was causing deaths and injuries in many children. And only just recently are these being pulled off of the market after far too many injuries and deaths in children. And so we need a Consumer Product Safety Commission that is working to ensure that the products that are in our homes and that are used by our kids are safe. You know, I could have been one of those people buying one of those strollers and never would have known if I hadn't just seen that happened to see the Washington Post investigation about it. But, you know, we really need to have the government looking after things like this so that we can worry less as parents about some of these things and worry more on some of the things that we should be, like, you know, how our kids are doing in school and, you know, how they're meeting their milestones developmentally.
You write that the Trump administration has delayed implementation of something known as the chemical disaster rule. What was the purpose of that rule?
The chemical disaster rule was this really important improvement at EPA, which to the risk management program, which is, you know, all chemical facilities are required to have plans in place for if there is a chemical disaster, because a lot of them keep dangerous, flammable, explosive products on site. And if there is a flood or a fire, these things, you know, can actually make the problem worse, not just on site, but for the communities in which they're located. And what this rule would have done is give more information to those communities about what they would be exposed to if there were an emergency situation. Because what we're seeing right now with these facilities is there are explosions and fires all the time, especially in Texas, at many of the chemical facilities around the Houston area. And people don't know what they're breathing. People are being told to shelter in place in schools or their homes, but they don't know, should they shut their windows or should they be wearing a face mask? What is it that they're breathing? This information should be made available to them so that parents can do the best thing that they can do for their kids to keep them safe. And currently that's not the case. And so under the Obama administration, there was a rule that was finalized that came out in 2016 that was then very promptly rolled back by this and the Trump administration. And so, you know, there would have been progress that we still have yet to see. And it's really important progress for these communities that are already experiencing so much tragedy and so much harm. And really, all they're asking for is information about what they're being exposed to from these companies that are supposed to be their neighbors.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. All right, let's go back to the phones. We have Dwight calling from Dallas, Texas. Hi, Dwight.
Hello. The Trump administration is pretty antagonistic to criticism, so I'm wondering, how can ordinary citizens help keep science and EPA?
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for that. And it's so important that all of us get involved to think about how science should be informing these policies. I hope you will join us at UCS by checking out our website and joining our network. But also, you know, you can get involved in local policy efforts. You can write letters to the editor in local newspapers. You can ask for meetings with your elected officials to help hold the administration accountable for some of these things, for prioritizing science and prioritizing kids' health. in decisions that are made. So we would, you know, there's no issue that's too big for us to chip away at a local scale or by just, you know, one person. And so I hope you feel as if you can, you know, really get involved, take the information from this report and get out there and tell people that you care about science and that you care about children's health and the health of future generations.
Just for some context, we've talked about a lot of troubling information and we've just scratched the surface on what appears in the report. Has the Union of Concerned Scientists published similar reports on other presidential administrations? Is there one of these every 4 years?
You know, we have not done a look at all of the ways in which previous administrations have impacted kids' health. We haven't felt the need in the past under Republican or Democratic administrations. What we're seeing under the Trump administration is such an egregious lack of interest and lack of valuing of the lives of children, our most precious resource. And we couldn't help but make sure that we were sending this message and telling people what happens when you undermine science. It impacts real people across the country. And we want to make sure people understand that so that they can get involved in their communities and hold elected officials accountable for some of these issues. And, you know, there are many things that previous administrations, both Democratic and Republican, have done that have been very supportive for kids' health. You know, other administrations have taken lead out of gasoline and have established requirements that the FDA test their drugs on kids if they're going to be selling it to kids. So we know what that looks like. There's a long, long list of protections that have been put in place by administrations previous to the Trump administration because other people have really understood that children are our most precious resource. And we're not seeing that same type of valuing by this administration.
The final thing I want to ask you about is you note that children are at risk from climate change and some of those hazards begin before babies are even born.
Right. You know, there are the rising temperatures can actually have really negative impacts on the way on birth outcomes. So as we are entering this climate or experiencing this climate emergency, we really need to be thinking about what this means for the next generation and what this means for women and women's health and women of reproductive age. And, you know, the Trump administration's complete lack of action to address the issue of climate change and to reduce emissions or take steps to reduce emissions, pulling us out of the Paris Agreement that would have helped us agree to do that very thing. All of these are extremely cynical because we understand that the people, the kids who will be experiencing the most dire consequences of climate change and all of these other environmental threats are going to be are least responsible for the very issue itself.
Jenna Reed is lead science and policy analyst in the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists, and she is lead author of the new report, Endangering Generations, How the Trump Administration's Assault on Science is Harming Children's Health. Jenna, thank you so much for spending this hour with us.
Thank you. It was great to talk to you.
You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle is at KERA Think. Subscribe to our podcast and learn about upcoming shows at our website, think.kera.org. Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.